is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. So, Timmy, we are sitting here. It's a few days before Halloween, and for those of you that may not know this yet, if you're living in a cave, the Ghost Hunters TV show is doing a live six-hour event on Halloween from the historic Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. And the following day, Darkness on the Edge of Town is going to be invading Estes, Colorado as well. Tim, we're going to be heading out there. Can you believe it's only 3 days away?
I can't wait to investigate Jan Grant.
Yes.
It'll be fun.
They're scary.
I'm going to short sheet their bed.
Yes. We'll be going out there along with 225 of our listeners to go on out there. We're going to be investigating one of the most haunted hotels in the United States. And we're going to be out there with Jason and Grant and Paula from the TV show Ghost Hunters. Also with Chris Fleming from the TV show Dead Famous. We've got some other fantastic speakers. Janice Oberding will be there talking to us about the ghosts of Las Vegas and Nevada. We'll also be hearing from the Constantinos, Mark and Debbie, who are EVP specialists. They'll be doing a talk. We also have out there joining us will be J. Allen Danilek talking about his book, The Case for Ghosts. And finally, that evening, we're going to also, that trip, we're going to be talking to Leslie Rule, talking about one of her new books as well, When the Ghosts Scream. So this is an amazing event, and if you missed out on it, weren't able to attend this event, we do have other events that are going to be coming up in the future. So please do keep a look on our website at darknessradio.com, and then click on the trips button. There you can see information about all the upcoming trips that we're doing, like the fantastic trip we keep talking about at the Queen Mary that's going to be coming up in January. You will not want to miss this. We have some amazing things in store for you, some great surprises, and a couple of surprise guests that nobody will expect to see there. So if you want to join in on all the fun, make sure that you go to darknessradio.com, click on the trips tab, and join us on one of the upcoming trips. This evening, we're spending a little bit of time talking with our guests about the myths and some of the monsters that make Halloween so much fun. We've got John Zafson for the first hour talking about some actual possession cases that he's worked on in the case or in the field of lycanthropy. And our next guest, her name is Linda S. Godfrey. She's a newspaper reporter and a columnist for over 10 years before she began writing books. She's won several national first place awards for her stories and investigations. She's married with two sons. She also uses her field studies, interviews, and other standard techniques to examine her main research focus, which is a mysterious bipedal canine that stalks forests and cornfields from Wisconsin to New York State. She has a book out called The Beast of Bray Road, which is definitely worth a pickup and a read. And she has a new book out called Hunting the American Werewolf. Both are out by Trails Books. You can find a link for them on our website by going to darknessradio.com. Click on the listen or on the show tab, you'll see the picture. And we also have links there for you to actually go in there and order either one of the books. She's written other books and has a couple more coming out in 2007, so you want to keep updated with that as well. But we'd like to welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town the lovely and talented Mrs. Linda S. Godfrey. Good evening.
Well, good evening, David.
Thank you very much for joining us here this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I've got to ask you, you know, you're a learned woman. You've been an investigative reporter for a newspaper. You've done these things. When were you introduced to the stories of a purported werewolf roaming the cornfields of Wisconsin?
Well, this happened at the very end of the year back in 1991 when people around Elkhorn, I learned, were saying that they had seen, for lack of a better word, what they were calling werewolves. And they were actually calling the county's animal control officer and saying, I saw this thing, and I don't know what to call it, but if there was such a thing as werewolves, well, then that's what it looked like. So our Walworth County Animal Control officer actually had a manila file folder that I saw in his office marked werewolf. And I, you know, went down there and visited him, and he shared the names of the people that had been calling him that he had in that folder, and that was where I got the first witnesses to talk to, and it just kind of snowballed from there.
So you're called out. You go check out these different places. Now, at this time, you were writing for the newspaper, I take it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you were looking for, you know, an exploitive, fun kind of story, right? Something different than just the normal, you know, gas price wars or whatever else is going on.
Well, I would say we were looking for it, although the newspaper that that I worked for actually always was kind of, you know, loose and fun in terms of what they would, you know, sometimes be willing to print. You know, definitely not tabloid type stuff. But at the time, this came up, and I remember talking about it with my editor, you know, and we were kind of vetting it and saying, well, you know, is this something, you know, that we really should write about? And we finally concluded that, you know, it was a slow news time of year and that people in the local vicinity would probably have some fun with it for a couple of weeks and then forget all about it. And boy, was I never so wrong.
When you started to investigate this, get us into your mindset, Linda. Were you thinking, boy, just a bunch of nuts? What a bunch of goofballs. You know, was that your mindset on it? Were you intrigued?
Well, you know,
did you have a belief in the paranormal before that?
I never thought of the witnesses as nuts or goofballs, but I was highly skeptical. You know, I was thinking that they were probably mistaken in what they saw. And
describe to us what they saw.
What they were saying that they saw was something about 6 feet tall with the head of a wolf or a German shepherd covered with brown fur, usually with a snarling or challenging expression, glaring eyes that shined yellow, you know, in headlights. And
you never thought they were nuts?
Well, and it was walking on 2 feet. You know, that was
that's my point. I mean,
that was a strange thing. Well, you know, these were people, when you live in a small town, you know, mm-hmm. you know who people are, and
right.
and they weren't known as crazy people or anything like that.
Neither was Ed Gein.
They weren't well.
Right.
I think people always thought there was a little something off about him, you know. But, no, these were not Ed Gein types. These were just, you know, a young mother, you know, working as a bartender to make ends meet, female high school student was another one, you know, a farmer on Bray Road. These were people that they were just ordinary citizens that saw something. You know, if you want to play a prank, you don't phone into the county animal control officer
right.
and contact all the authorities and get them down on you. You know, that's not what you do if you're trying to play a prank or you're not sure of yourself even.
Were most of the eyewitnesses female?
No, not really.
Okay.
People keep asking me, what's the common denominator for these witnesses? You know, are they all alcoholics? Are they all, you know, whatever? And I have to say no. I've searched and I've got at least 100 between Wisconsin and Michigan alone. And there is really no common, they're men, women, children to elderly, blue collar, white collar, educated, uneducated, doesn't seem to matter. It's just that they happen to be in the right place at the right time. One common denominator is that many of them have situations that cause them to be out late at night, you know, when this thing is more likely to be seen. But not all. A fair number of the sightings have occurred in broad daylight.
And there's no mistaking that it's a wolf, not a bear-like creature that's walking on two legs.
Oh, yeah. I always ask people, you know, mm-hmm. how did you know this wasn't a bear? How did you know, that it wasn't a deer? You know, and people who live in...
a snarling deer?
Well,
that deer's got such a bad attitude out here in Wisconsin.
You can be quite vicious.
Right,
you know? Yeah,
I know.
Actually, they can. If you get them, you know, a buck at the wrong time of year, or there was a woman in Palmyra not far from here who was pummeled to death by one in her car, actually.
Wow.
So, but,
what was
you know,
the deer doing inside her car?
She had hit it, and its claws actually
no.
went in. It was a horrible story.
Oh.
Went in through the windshield, and she was strapped in her seatbelt and couldn't get out. But most people in Wisconsin and Michigan know extremely well what deer and bear look like, you know, and bear especially have this, you know, distinctive gait. They don't run down a road on two legs. They may rear up and stand around and look, you know, but they don't run and walk easily, and they're not they don't have the thin canine legs
that
people who see this thing describe.
Now, with all the calls that were going into animal control, how many times did animal control or the police show up, and were there prints?
There actually had been at that time one party that reported prints, but they never really called the authorities out to look at them. It was on Potter's Road, and they had nicknamed whatever it was making them potsy, because they didn't know after Potter's Road, because they didn't know what it was that was making them. There was another woman out on Bray Road who found dog-like prints large enough to fit her lady's size 9 moon boots inside of. But, you know, out in the middle of a farm field, she didn't have plaster Paris or a camera with her. She was out disking the field.
Sure.
You know, so they didn't have any evidence. The authorities, you know, really weren't called out on this sort of thing all that often. And when they were, they would tend to poo-poo it or, you know, say that it was something like that. My favorite was the explanation of a deformed coyote rearing up and being mistaken for a 6-foot thing running down the road. You know, I don't think so. These people aren't stupid.
What's your belief? Do you believe that there's a werewolf? As we've, you know, I'm guessing it's not the type that from the movies. You don't believe that? Do they believe that this is somebody in town turning into this creature, or is it just a beast?
Well, I know of three separate incidents where people actually tried to pull hoaxes out there, but it was after it became kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it doesn't really explain any of the sightings.
Who would be stupid enough to go out there dressed like a werewolf to try to pull off a hoax?
Oh, trust me.
I would think there's guys waiting with shotguns waiting to knock this thing down.
Oh, completely, yeah. And I make that really clear in my book when I'm talking about this. But no, people have admitted to me that they were dumb enough. One wore a bear suit, one wore a gorilla suit. There were two teenagers with werewolf masks that tried it. And it did all dawn on all of them, I think, eventually, that they were, you know, on rather dangerous territory. And you're right, I do not believe that this is a Lon Chaney, you know, transforming type of werewolf type of thing. Personally, according to all the stories, I think it's either some kind of natural animal that has maybe a canine species that has adapted, you know, because there are a lot of advantages to being able to be on two legs. Or, you know, it does seem to fit well into some of the some people would call supernatural theories. My own pastor's wife believes it's a demon, and that's something I've heard from a lot of people. Native Americans believe that it is a combination spirit-animal shapeshifter type of thing.
Well, like the Navajo skinwalkers, correct?
Well, possibly. There's two different sources. There's one thing that's like an earth spirit, you know, that can go back and forth between the physical and the spirit world. The other is like the Navajo skinwalker, a shapeshifter that is actually, you know, a medicine man or shaman transforming themselves or their astral body into another creature.
Linda, what's your belief? Do you believe that this creature exists?
I believe that all these people are seeing what they said they saw. What it is, I don't know, because I don't think that all the evidence is in yet, and we don't have one to look at. You know, I think anybody who says they absolutely know what it is being just a little bit arrogant, because nobody has all the facts yet. And
Right. That's
why I continue to collect the reports and ask people to contact me and let me know more, because until we can get every last one that's possible to get, you know, and put the data all together, it's going to be impossible to say.
So you've been following this quest for 14, 15 years now. Have you seen anything yourself that you just don't understand?
yeah, I actually haven't. You know, you say I've been following the quest, although sometimes I feel like it's been following me.
Right.
You know, it's really strange. It's not something that I set out to do as a little girl. Was, you know, become the national werewolf expert.
Dear diary, today I decided to become a national werewolf expert.
Yeah, okay. You know, it just wasn't like that. It wasn't what I had planned, but it does seem to be the work that has been set out for me to do, and I try to do it to the best of my ability. What was your original question, though? I'm sorry.
That's okay. I get distracted by my own talking, too. We get to, do you actually believe you've seen anything?
Oh, have I seen anything?
Right. Have you actually seen anything that you just left scratching your chin going, what the hell was that?
The one time, I've done overnight stakeouts and driven around late at night and traveled to hot spots as soon as I hear about things without any luck until this last summer I was at a spot in Michigan that's had a number of sightings by several witnesses who have seen at least two different creatures, you know, at this same location, about an hour south of Traverse City. And there was something, I was there with three previous witnesses and a cameraman, and there was something playing around the edges of our spotlights and camera lights. You know, it seemed to have figured out exactly from where we were how much we could illuminate and then would stay out of whatever, you know, that range was. But I did turn around and look down the road and shine my mag light just in time to see something cross the road just on the outer edge, and the light managed to illuminate the back edge of its fur as it was just getting the contours of its back, and the back was vertical. Something was crossing the road. It had to be 6 or 7 feet tall because it was about the same height as a road sign that was located right there, and it momentarily blotted out this reflective road sign as it passed in front of it and went into the woods, and the roadside, you know, was at least 6 feet off the road.
So, you're believing that these people are seeing what they say they're seeing. You believe that it may be a giant two-legged wolf hanging out there. What would possess you, Linda, to go out and keep trying to track this thing?
I know. Well,
I'm 6'1", 250 yes. pounds, and I'll tell you what, there's no way in hell you're getting me out in a cornfield in Wisconsin. And that has nothing to do with werewolves. But there's no way you're going to get me out in a cornfield in Wisconsin looking for something like this if this many people believe they're seeing it. Don't you have fear for yourself?
Well, part of it is that, to my knowledge, unless somebody was just completely eaten and never lived to tell the tale, mm-hmm. nobody has been harmed by this creature. It seems to ferociously, and it's so consistent. I mean, in all these dozens and dozens and dozens of sightings, it seems to aggressively scare people, impress them with the thought that it wants to eat them or, you know, stay away or something like that. Not in so many words, but that's just the feeling they get from it. And then as soon as they're off their guard a little bit or frightened or turn, it makes its escape into the nearest cover. And it's almost always careful to stay near some kind of cover. You know, it's not just out strolling down Bray Road or any of the other sightings locations like a character in Disneyland. You know, people seem to have this feeling that they can drive up to one of these sightings areas and it's like going to Disneyland and Mickey Mouse will be, you know, standing there to greet them. And, you know, it's not like
that. It's an animal. It's hiding.
Yeah, and the sightings are actually very rare, you know. They're not terribly common when you consider the population size, you know, per sightings. Bigfoot sightings are much more common. And we do have those, too. And I do track them if they're in the same area as this thing because it's useful to kind of know the overall number of sightings and to be able to distinguish between the two.
Well, why don't we delve more into that? We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Our guest is Linda Godfrey. She's the author of The Beast of Bray Road and the new book, Hunting the American Werewolf. We'll be back with more right after this.
The New York Times has raved about the show. The Star Tribune says it's paranormally funny. And the Biscayne Bugle said, how could they put this crap on the air and live with themselves?
I am so sorry for everything that has happened. Because in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault. Because it was my project. Everything had to be my way. And this is where we've ended up.
Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
If you read Taspara Mag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd and the creepy. Taspara Mag takes you to view wherever you go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology, the field of the paranormal, to join our journey, order at Taspara Mag.
I know I didn't have an alien problem, and I know that I am not under alien control.
Now it's your turn.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town. Unfortunately, Dave's been eaten by a werewolf. I guess I have to take over the rest of the show. No, just a quick note before we get back to our guest, Linda Godfrey. We wanted to mention again about Russ Clark, and you definitely got to check out his website, as I, too, have a CD from Russ. It's a weight loss CD. I've lost 10 pounds since I've been on the CD, and it's worked wonders for me, and I continue to use it. And I encourage you also to check out Russ's website as well. And, in fact, Dave, as he mentioned before, it's working wonders for him, too. And, in fact, he used to have huge self-confidence problems, and now he looks down on everybody. So it's a wonderful deal.
So check him out at powerhypnosis.net. That's Russ Clark, our friend, at powerhypnosis.net. I just want to make a quick mention, as I started at the beginning of the first hour talking about UFOs and the event that we had occur out in Trout Lake, Washington, I want people to go check out James Gilliland's website. It is ECETI.org. Again, that's ECETI.org. And if you get a chance to go out to this man's ranch, talk to him, contact him, email him, tell him you heard about it on Darkness Radio and you want to come out there. He also has a little bed and breakfast set up so that you can actually go out there and stay a couple nights as well. It has got to be one of the most amazing events I've ever lived through in my entire life. We had a great opportunity to stay down there and met with the fantastic people from the Trout Lake Motel as well. Dave and Carly, I just want to thank them very much. You have a beautiful place. You're going to want to check it out when you go out there, and you can look at that at troutlakemotel.com. It's beautiful, and it's located at 2300 Highway 141 in Trout Lake, Washington. 98650. Give them a call at 509-395-2300. Tell them Dave from Darkness Radio sent you out there. You will not be disappointed. It's probably one of the prettiest little rustic hotels you'll ever see. And it's got a great view of the sky, the mountains, and you get an opportunity to go out in UFO gaze. It's a fantastic opportunity. We're going to get back into the show right now with our guest, Linda Godfrey. And Linda's the author of many books, but two of the ones that we're talking about this evening are The Beast of Bray Road, Trailing Wisconsin's Werewolf, or Tailing Wisconsin's Werewolf, I'm sorry, and Hunting the American Werewolf. And she also has some new books that will be coming out in 2007. We'll find out a little bit more about those at the end of the show. But let's get back into the topic for this evening, which is werewolves and lycanthropy. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the different things that have been seen and your belief that you believe that these people are seeing something that's kind of a political answer, and you think you've seen something outside of the area, but you're also mentioning that you have some Bigfoot sightings there as well. Do the Bigfoot coincide with the sightings of this werewolf creature throughout the places that you've been investigating?
They do seem to, although I've noticed that in Wisconsin, the Bigfoot sightings tend to be clustered more in the northern part of the state, and then the man-wolf sightings tend to be clustered more in the southern part of the state, but they are interspersed, you know, in between, but there will be little areas, even in the southern part of the state, where I'll notice there seem to be more, the sightings tend toward the Bigfoot, kind of like they have their own little turf carved out, you know.
The Jets within, and the Sharks, huh?
Within the areas, yeah, sure. Yeah. And I've heard from a couple of my Native American friends that say they know of these things and that they don't like each other, that, you know, they compete in the same areas for food, and you won't find them in exact, you know, they aren't strolling through the cornfields arm in arm, put it that way. But they are seen, you know, in roughly the same areas.
Now, you alluded earlier that there's been no bodies found, no slayings. Have you checked ever into the areas where there's a high concentration of these things appearing? Are there missing person reports ever?
Well, not really that I've been able to find. Some of the highest, Bray Road is one of the higher concentrations, although there haven't been any sightings in recent years. But nobody was missing from out there. You know, they weren't having a lot of livestock depredation or anything like that being reported. However, I've also noted that, you know, we have all other kinds of predators out here, you know, coyotes and
mountain lions, but, cougars, right?
There have been a couple cougars in the area,
right.
DNR have told me, and I have a bobcat living in my own backyard that I've seen. You know, so if small livestock is missing, people won't really know. And these creatures, from what I can tell, appear to be scavengers as much as anything else, because they're very frequently seen with a roadkill in their paws or hands or whatever you might call it.
Sure. I would guess in Wisconsin, all the deer and elk and things that get hit, it's probably a smorgasbord for the creatures. They wouldn't have to be out hunting people's cattle.
Right, parts of deer carcasses. I have heard a couple reports of people reporting that they saw chasing down a deer. So, and it wouldn't surprise me if it didn't hunt, you know, smaller animals or creatures.
Sure.
But, you know, it has to subsist on something. I mean, even if it is part supernatural or spirit being, whatever it is when it's here, it's quite physical and corporeal. You know, it leaves footprints. It can make splashes on things. You know, it is quite physically present. And the huge majority of people who have seen it felt that it was a physical being, you know, that they were witnessing.
So with the territorial area that we're taking over, I mean, we're taking over wilderness left and right now here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can understand places like, what is that, right outside of Papua New Guinea, where they've just found all these, you know, new butterflies and bird species that they didn't know existed. I could see some remote island village in some third world country holding some kind of animal that we haven't seen, but for God's sakes, it's Wisconsin. It's
right.
Nebraska, it's through New York even.
Yeah.
How can in this day and age of technology, satellite technology, thermal vision, how can we not have seen more of this, or Bigfoot, in your opinion? How are these things escaping or eluding us?
Well, Dave, part of it, I think, is exactly what you said. We are taking over all the wilderness territory, and everything that is used to living there is having to come out by us in order to survive. And many creatures, you know, like bear, there was a bear reported in downtown Madison, Wisconsin, you know, our state capital, just 2 years ago. Many creatures are coming out. They're finding garbage to their liking and learning that, you know, wherever there are cars, animals get hit and killed conveniently for them to eat. You know, so they're kind of learning to adapt to us. And I think that these creatures are pretty much the same, and they seem to be adapting physically. For instance, the Bigfoot that are seen around Wisconsin are fairly much smaller than, you know, out on the West Coast, where, you know, in Washington State, the Bigfoot are reported to be 8 to 10 feet tall and, you know, 700 to 800 pounds. Out here, they're usually said to be around 7 feet tall, maybe 300 to 400 pounds, whereas the man-wolf creature is usually said to be around 6 feet tall, maybe up to seven, sometimes as short as 5.5, and usually weight estimates are between 150 and 250. So they're not huge animals, and they do seem very intelligent, very good at hiding themselves, and, you know, thermal imagery cameras are really not a common thing. They're kind of expensive yet and aren't universally used. I think if they were used, you know, if somebody had the money to really do an all-out search in a hot sightings area for one of these creatures, you know, maybe we would have a little bit more success. But
well, don't most forestry rangers and things like that. They've shown footage on TV when kids have gone missing in the wilderness, and they'll do flyovers with these planes and helicopters that are equipped with this thermal cam.
Well, you can get that kind of thing when you've got a missing child or person, but very few places are going to take their high-tech expensive stuff and go out looking in the woods for a man wolf, you know, or even a Bigfoot.
Are you familiar with NIDS? The people that are running the Skinwalker Ranch up in Utah?
Oh, uh-huh.
Now, you know, I mean, that's a billionaire that's sinking money into the investigation of the paranormal. You know, there's people like Dan Aykroyd who are heavily into the paranormal.
That's what it takes. Yeah,
right.
I haven't found that kind of a backer yet. Even a major TV network that I was working with wouldn't spring for the thermal imagery. But I'd be happy to do it. I think it'd be great. I think if we'd had that night that I saw that vertical thing cross the road in Michigan, if we'd had thermal imaging, we probably would have had something very startling on it.
Is there a time of year where these are more prevalent?
Yes. The sightings do occur at all times of the year, even in winter, but they are most prevalent in the fall months, at least around here. And I think it's partly because of the cornfields that are up everywhere. They're what I call, creature highways of delight, because they can get around virtually unseen, you know, in the 6 to 7 foot corn stalk. The fields are full of deer and other things feasting on the corn, so they've got food and cover, you know, it's a great time. And that's why they're so frequently seen running across the road, you know, popping from one cornfield to the next.
That's just boggling my mind. What I'd like to do, Linda, seriously, we've got some connections with people that are interested in doing this paranormal investigations and have the equipment. We'll definitely have to talk off air, because I think what we can do is we'll try to arrange something and see if we can't go on a great werewolf hunt with you here in the future, and maybe you can take us to a few of these hot spots, and we'll bring along people that have the wherewithal and the money to fly us over these areas and see if we can't find something.
Nothing better.
The government's dumping money in the migration policies of the, you know, earwig. Millions of dollars are spent every year finding out what makes a monkey masturbate, and nobody wants to put out any money to find out if there's a Bigfoot in the United States. That just totally boggles my mind why the government isn't checking into these type of allegations and things more closely.
Right.
Do you believe, or have you come across people that believe that this is more of an interdimensional creature?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
why it's not seen here that much. What are your theories on interdimensional species like this?
I believe it's entirely possible. I think if you're following anything like the cutting-edge quantum physics, I'm certainly not qualified to really go into detail and explain anything. I can't pretend to totally understand it, although I, you know, try. But, you know, they're saying that in order for physics, as they believe it exists, to occur, there have to be a minimum of 11 other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And who are we to say that there can't be more, there can't be some touching ours or intersecting with ours, that they can't also be inhabited in some way? It just doesn't make sense to think that they can't be.
Well,
and
I'll tell you this, Linda. I've this whole interdimensional cohabitation, to me, has sounded so fantasy and far-fetched for so long. I was, as I alluded to when we came back from the last break, I was out in Washington, Trout Lake, Washington, over the weekend. I'd recommend you go out there and take a look at this place. It's amazing. I've always thought people that are talking about these trans-dimensional characters and creatures are completely out of their nut, smoking something up in the Highland Mountains there.
Mm-hmm.
I saw something.
Really?
Totally blown away. Totally blown away.
What did you see?
I saw a creature in the air.
What kind of creature?
I don't know. I've never seen anything like it.
What was it? What did it look like?
It was, first of all, the way it moved, you know, you've seen footage of stingrays, the way they
mm-hmm.
swim.
Yeah.
And it's almost like that butterfly flutter at the bottom.
Right.
It appeared, it was about 200... maybe 250 yards away from me. And I would say by putting my hands together and like making wings formation like a bird, like
mm-hmm.
we do, making a shadow puppet, it had to be as big as my hands. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was silent. And it was, it was blue, like a glowing internal blue creature. And as as it progressed out towards the tips of the wings, it was more translucent or clear, see-through.
Wow.
And this thing moved across the sky silently and just gracefully. I feel like I'm completely nuts having seen it myself.
Well, the reason I'm so interested is because, you know, I've been investigating for the past month a very credible sighting of what we're calling the man bat.
Right, right. I wanted to get into that as well, and that's kind of what we're bringing in this direction. But this is,
wow.
Linda, it's amazing to me. I went out there, and this guy has been talking about UFOs and activity and creatures and things that he sees on his property all the time. And, you know, he looks like Grizzly Adams in his pictures, and he's a sweet guy. But, you know, I figured he had to be growing his own weed in the backyard to see all this stuff.
Right.
And I went out there completely stone-cold sober, complete skeptic, waiting for this guy to fall on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Two nights that I was out there, first night, I saw things and rationalized it away. You know, it's just satellites, it's this, that, the other. The second night, my mind was completely blown off my shoulders with the things that I witnessed.
That's amazing.
I'm going to keep some of the stuff for the upcoming show we're going to have back on. I wanted to mention the creature to you because talking about interdimensional creatures, again, like I said, it seems like it's fantasy, far-fetched, it's impossible. But now, you know, I mean, the Skinwalker Ranch book breaks, you know, starts off with this family taking over this ranch.
Exactly.
And they're attacked by a werewolf-like creature that will not go down after being repeatedly shot.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and that's what you hear with the creature they call the Lobazon. In South America, there was a family that stomped one to death, they thought. They thought they had pulverized it, and it got up and ran away.
Pulverized a wolf-like creature?
Yeah, they call it the Lobazon. It's the same type of animal that is seen in South America. And I've heard other reports of people saying they shot it with a gun and winged it, sort of, but it made no difference. In Hunting the American Werewolf, there's the party of teenagers who had BB guns and shot at it with the BB guns, but it just, you know, bounced off. And of course, BBs wouldn't kill it anyway, but,
right.
You know, it might at least act irritated.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the creatures and talk a little bit more about your second book, Hunting the American Werewolf. We'll do that, and we're going to go to a quick commercial break. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show with our guest, Linda Godfrey.
Don't you dare move. There's more to come from The Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Do you love to travel? Do you love to explore the paranormal? Then join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis from Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show as we take our show on the road. January 14th and 17th, we'll be going to sunny Long Beach, California to investigate one of the top 5 haunted spots in the world, the Haunted Queen Mary. Joining us on our journey are the lovely ladies of TV's The Ghost Hunters, Donna LaCroix and Lisa DeVall, paranormal investigator Patrick Burns from Cork TV's hit new show, Haunting Evidence, and psychic sensitive Chris Fleming from Dead Famous on the Biography Channel. Together, we'll explore the mysteries and history of this famous floating haunted playground. Joining us will be some other special guest speakers and authors. It's a great chance to meet others that are involved in the paranormal and share your interests. For more information and prices, visit our website at darknessradio.com, then click the Trips tab, then click on the Queen Mary. Remember to check back for information on upcoming trips as well. And tune in live each Sunday night to hear a new episode with Dave and Tim and their guests covering all aspects of the paranormal on The Darkness on the Edge of Town. For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Do you want to take charge of your life? We all have our demons we want to get rid of. This is Russ Clark. My Hypnosis CD series will help you take charge of your life and kick those demons out. Thousands of people have made personal improvements through the power of hypnosis. Your success is guaranteed by me, or I will refund 100% of your investment. To kick those demons or to add relaxation into your life, visit my website, www.powerhypnosis.net.
Mommy!
Leave me alone!
Do you have ghosts?
Do you have dreams?
Do you have an interest in the unknown? Want to know more about the paranormal? Come and join us in Para-Investigators, the 24-7 online paranormal chat. Visit us today at InfinityParanormal.com and tell us what's been keeping you up in the dark.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Here we go, on purpose.
From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters, the latest trend technology, the feeling of the paranormal, to join our journey, we're at TapsParamag.com.
Bigfoot, Nessie, Ogopogo, Yeti, Chupacabra, please stop calling these guys names. They, the Tim, have feelings, you know.
Back to the lot with you, Ricky.
Welcome back.
Thanks a lot for joining us here tonight. Our guest is Linda Godfrey, and we're talking about myths and monsters. We're talking about the American werewolf in Wisconsin, I guess. It's also been seen, what'd you say, they're going all the way from Wisconsin through New York. You're able to track these things?
Oh, yeah, that's why I had to call the second book Hunting the American Werewolf, because it's all the way as far east. It seems to migrate down around through the Great Lakes, through Ohio and Pennsylvania, up to northern New York State, and then down as far south as Georgia and Texas, where they call it Old Snout Nose.
So these things are everywhere. It's not just held to Wisconsin, Nebraska, some cornfield state. It's all over.
It is all over. It's not just Wisconsin. It's not just Bray Road. It's very widespread. I've had people tell me that relatives of theirs who were servicemen in France in World War II came home telling stories about seeing something like this. You know, so it's not even just the United States. It's up into Canada. That is actually where the one place I've had a report of an injury was from a Canadian who had this thing lunge at him and sink a fang into his hip, and he was left with a gash, but he emailed me a picture of a 10-inch scar.
What? Now, did they test the saliva to see if it was canine at all?
Well, he was too embarrassed to say, you know, that he thought it was a werewolf that slashed him. So he just said, I think he told him it was a wolf or something like that. You know, he didn't try to have it investigated. He has a rather high position in the business world and didn't want to get known for this. So I actually have that photograph is posted on the Wereblog page of my beastofbrayroad.com website.
So people can go to beastofbrayroad.com?
Right.
And it's spelled B-R-A-Y road, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That's exactly right. And that page, it hasn't been updated for a while. I've been having some technical difficulties with that site. The blog is still there, but I've had to move the sightings blog and one other item, the schedule, I think, to one of my other websites. And there are directing links, you know, to take people there. But don't be dismayed if the site looks a little strange.
Linda, we'll get you in touch with our guys over at Evolve Systems that do our website. They do a phenomenal job. Don Raleigh can
really
pop you on a site. Oh, yeah, he's great.
Oh, that'd be great. Well, you know, it's very odd, though, because I've spent hours on the phone with technicians. You know, I have three websites, and the only one that is being really screwy is beastofbrayroad.com. And nobody can figure out why. And every time I try to upload something, it just erases the page. But my other bigger websites are not affected, and they load perfectly, and I have the same host. It's really weird.
The government doesn't want you telling us information. Well, you check our website at darknessradio.com on the left side there, or on the right side. There's a bunch of flip banners. Click on Evolve Systems. Talk to Don Raleigh, and for anybody else out there listening, if you're looking for a great website hosting people, they can get stuff up for you. Our website was built and maintained and shot up within 6 hours of the time I told them what I wanted.
Wow,
it basically looks the same, yeah, so they'd definitely be somebody good to speak with. But so people can check that out. Now, you also have another website, right? CNB? Dash scene, S-C-E-N-E.com.
Right. Right. Okay. CNB like Charlie Nancy Boy and short dash S-C-E-N-E.com and weirdmichigan.com.
Weirdmichigan.com. Okay. So you've been able to track these animals all over. Why are there no remains for these animals that are appearing anywhere?
Like well, that's a really good question, Dave, and it's one that people have always asked about Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And I give partly the same answer, but I go a little bit beyond that. Part of it is that, you know, in general, remains of large carnivores are quite rare. I mean, when you're walking around in the woods, how often do you see a bear carcass? You know, there's dozens of deer carcasses, but, you know, very few things kill large carnivores outright unless it's a hunter that takes the body with it. And they seem to sometimes have the inner sense to go away and hide themselves when they die. That's one thing. The other thing is that there's very many opportunistic creatures out there that will, you know, dismantle a carcass very quickly. The other thing is that I think that if you did find a dead Bigfoot, you'd know what you were looking at. You'd know that you had a really unusual, strange animal. I think that if you found a dead man wolf, you would think, wow, that was one big wolf.
Right.
But there's no distinguishing feature other than the fact that they are quite large, larger than an average wolf would be, and that they walk upright to distinguish them. They don't have human features. They don't have hands or, you know, and anything else other than, you know, the regular canine physiologies, as far as I know. There are other things out there that do, but these man wolves seem to look like natural wolves or canines of some kind that have been able to adapt to walk on their hind legs.
Hmm.
So I was just going to mention real quick, I've had several people report what they thought was a dead one of these things, but they just thought, you know, that it was like a giant wolf lying all the way across the road, you know, stretching like 6 feet from tip to tip.
You know, I was watching a special last night, actually, late night, on hunting dragons. And it was, I think it's on the Discovery Channel or Animal Planet, one of those two. And they were actually following through history dragons and the lore of dragons and how they believe it was passed on. And what I found so funny was I was watching this is through all the books that I've read in so many different, religions and sects and cultures all across the world, they have werewolf myths as well.
Oh, yeah.
And what I thought was really interesting, one of the things I thought that was very interesting about this and where they hypothesized that the stories of dragons were handed down was that there are places like in the Badlands here where people can walk along and they'll come across a huge thigh bone from a T-Rex. It's just laying out there because it's unearthed itself
right.
through time. And what they believe is that, you know, as hunters and gatherers and people in the, you know, Dark Ages and growing through would find these giant remains of creatures that did not look recognizable to them.
Sure.
So it was giant. It had a huge head with these pointy teeth and sometimes wings like the pterodon. And
sure.
They would assume that it must be a dragon because the bones were right there. So it must have been an animal that died recently and was just, you know, torn apart and eaten there.
Right.
And I would guess that werewolves probably follow the same suit because we know for a fact, like with saber-toothed tigers and other creatures, that there were giant versions of these animals that once roamed our planet. So a giant wolf is not so...
megafauna.
Right. I mean, that's out there, and there very well could be the remains that are still laying there to be found. And
right.
People, you know, have assumed that, well, if it's that large... and it's doing, you know, I mean, it's humongous. It must have been a werewolf because that's what we've grown to understand what a werewolf is not just a, you know, a person that changes into an actual four-legged little coyote-looking wolf, you know, mangy-looking animal. It actually turns into this huge supernatural being. So I'm wondering if maybe that's where more of the werewolf lore has come from. Have you come across that during your research?
I haven't actually come across the idea that werewolf lore comes from the skeletal remains. It's more usually traced back to things like the Vikings, you know, with their berserker warriors who would wear bear skins and wolf skins into battle and then actually behave like those animals and until they almost convinced themselves. you know, and then stories would be taken home, you know, that they were being fought by human-like wolves by the, you know, the opposing, by the enemies. And also, looking back into cave art way back, you find many very early representations of combination human-animals right from the get-go. People had this idea that you could be a were-being, and it seemed to be related to shamans and probably to hunting and that sort of thing. But it comes out of our very close association with these animals, you know, that we've always had to hunt and kill in order to survive. And
right, but couldn't it be more along the lines with the cave drawings? See, where I kind of discount cave drawings and things like that is that they're taking on the, you know, they're passing their history and their stories. And it may not actually be a human that took wolf form, but couldn't it be, you know, that he was considered the wolf of the tribe or the bear of the tribe because he was a strong person? So they drew him part human, part animal to show his strength and where his place was in that tribe.
It was his totem.
Exactly, and it wasn't ever an animal or a human that could change shape, but it was more of just how they were looked upon in the society.
I think that could be too. You know, I think it was probably both. I really do. You know, I think that human society is very complex, and that every primitive society had its own little twist on things. You know, and not everybody did or saw things in exactly the same way.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the sequel here. You've got out Hunting the American Werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of takes up the quest to determine the nature of these canines that you've been checking out for the last 14, 15 years.
Right.
But you also cover other kind of man-like creatures that are out there, right?
Yeah. I feel it's sort of incumbent on me
sure.
Because there are theories that this thing perhaps is just different manifestations of the same earth spirit, perhaps. You know, that's one. And I really try and stay open-minded and kind of Freudian in my outlook, looking at every possibility equally and what fits the evidence best. And actually, this series sort of fits the bulk of the sighting reports the best. You know, it tends to account for a lot, because if they're actual breeding physical populations, it's hard to imagine that we could have in the same cornfield, Bigfoot and enough of these guys all finding enough food and coexisting without people really seeing them a lot more than they do.
Right. We've got about 3-4 minutes left of the show. We always usually like to kind of shake people up. From the books that you've done and the research you've done, what's the scariest story that you've come across that's really kind of chilled you to the bone just learning about it or reading about it?
Well, really, one of the scariest was this fellow near Holly, Michigan, who lived out on... Actually, he was a repo man who was trying to repossess a truck out on this Fish Lake Road, a very deserted, lonely road. I've driven it. And he's out there, gets out of his truck, leaves it running, is looking in a shed to see if the truck's in there. Hears a twig snap, turns around, and there is a 7-foot man wolf on its hind legs coming toward him, growling and looking just mad as a devil that it had been seen. And he said he knew in that instance, without a doubt, that it had been planning to sneak up upon him and eat him. That's what he thought. And this is a guy who's like 6'4" and, you know, used to junkyard dogs and all kinds of stuff. And he luckily was just close enough to his truck that he was able to make it in the door before the creature could get to him. His one thought was to spin the truck around and catch the thing in its headlights so he could see what it was. And by the time he managed to do that, it was gone. But he was just, you know, quivering like jelly by that time. But just the thought of being out there alone like that and this thing sneaking up on you.
Oh,
you
sure.
You hear the twig snap, you turn around, and there it is, 20 feet away.
Unreal. Well, you know, Linda, we're running out of time. I've got about a minute and a half left. We didn't get a chance to really start talking about the man bat. Maybe you could give us just a little flavor, and we'd love to have you back on the show when your other books are coming out. We could talk a little bit more about that as well. What's the man bat, and where is it being seen right now?
It's being seen on the Wisconsin River by La Crosse, Wisconsin. It was seen actually Tuesday, September 26th, by a man and his son. I actually have a page up on the CNBC site that details it completely. But this thing came up, flew at the windshield of their truck, had Harry had a wide mouthful of glistening fangs, bat-like wings with a wingspan of about 10 feet, and flew straight up in the air, and it made both of them physically ill. They both vomited all night after encountering this thing.
Wow. So and that's taking place in Wisconsin right now?
That was in Wisconsin, right. And there are a number of really strange correlations with this that I've been able to lay out on the website. Possible serial murders in the same place, lizard men sighted in the same place, and possibly a giant Washington sea eagle not very far away.
So people can go and they can find this on your website at cnb-scene.com. Get all the information there, and will you also be posting information there about your upcoming books?
Yes, I have book pages on all my websites. Great. And when they go to CNBC, click on the Bray Update page, and that will take them to all of this kind of stuff.
Awesome. Give me the quick names. What are some of the new books you have coming out?
I have coming out Strange Wisconsin, More Badger State Weirdness, and Strange Michigan, More Wolverine State Weirdness. Next year, right about this time, they should both be out.
Great. Well, Linda, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Keep in touch with us. We'd love to have you on and talk to you more about the other adventures that you're going on. And let's get in touch here and see if maybe we can't go out on a werewolf hunt together.
Let's do an expedition. I'm all for it.
I will definitely work on it. Thank you very much for being with us this evening, Linda.
Thanks again for having me, and have a great Halloween.
You too. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Halloween's just right around the corner. Make sure that you're out, you're safe, you're happy, you're healthy. Enjoy the time that you have with your family. Tim and I will be back next Sunday with a brand new show. You're not going to want to miss out on it. So make sure you tune in to Darkness on the Edge of Town Radio Show every Sunday night from 10 to midnight Central Time. Thank you very much, and make sure to check out our website as well at darknessradio.com, where you can join our growing forums, listen to archived shows, and check out our new home at planetparanormal.com.